Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
Episode 4, Season 7 of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast, where we are continuing to talk about old school bodybuilding. And our guest this week is Phil Williams. And Phil, of course, I've talked about on the show before. He was the 1985 NPC Nationals winner. And he also won the 1988 Chicago Pro Show. And I got a chance to know Phil pretty good when I did an interview with him a couple years ago. And then I got to see him again when I was out in California over Memorial Day weekend. I wanted to have Phil on the show to talk about his memories of old school bodybuilding. He not only trained at Gold's Gym in the 1980s, but he also trained at George Turner's gym before he moved to California. And that was in St. Louis. And for those of you who don't know, George Turner was a real old school legend as far as training and gurus and things like that. He was one of the first real bodybuilding trainers, and he was out in St. Louis, and he trained Tony Pearson. I think he trained Ken Waller for a while and helped a lot of bodybuilders. I think Samir went through his gym. I think Tom Platz did. So he had one of the best gyms in the country, and a lot of Midwest best bodybuilders came out of George Turner's gym, including Phil Williams. So we're going to talk to Phil about those days, his early days in bodybuilding, as well as his days training at Gold's Gym. So got a great conversation coming up with Phil Williams in a minute. And I do want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Redcon One. Everybody wants to be a champion. Everybody wants to be the best. But at Redcon One, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or running a six-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. Their premier clinically dosed pre-workout called Total War is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then you can fuel your body after those workouts with the revolutionary MRE. This is the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and carbs coming from sweet potatoes and oats. And it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com. and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon won the highest state of readiness. And also enter the discount code LEGENDS and you will get a 15% discount off your order. And be sure to check out their MRE bars, which is a new feature on Redcon One. And they have a lot of different flavors. And I know Aaron Singerman's really excited about those. So check out those MRE bars when you go to redcon1.com. And we are also sponsored by Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners. And you may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn. This is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner. Or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the 2017 Classic Physique Olympia champion, and this year's 2018 Classic Physique Arnold Classic champion. And he is gearing up for September for when they're going to have the next Olympia Classic Physique champion, and Breon is hoping to defend his title. They also sponsor the 1983 Mr. Olympia, Samir Banute, and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12, and you will get a 12% discount off your order at oldschoollabs.com, or you can go to amazon.com and make your order there also. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, hope everybody's having a good summer. I did release the new John Torelli interview, which was part two of our interview with John Torelli, and that is on the Bodybuilding Legends Show website. And we had part one of the John Torelli interview up a few weeks ago. So this was part two. And in this part of the interview, John talks about competing as a professional bodybuilder with the IFBB starting in 1983, where he competed in the Night of the Champions. And that was the Night of the Champions that Lee Haney won. That was his first pro win. and that was his first year as a pro. So John was in that contest, and he took fifth place. And then later that year, they had the Grand Prix. I think it was called the Caesars Grand Prix or the Las Vegas Grand Prix, and that was in 1983. And that was actually held in conjunction with the filming of Pumping Iron 2, The Women. And they had the contest that was in that movie was at Caesars Palace that year. So they had a men's bodybuilding contest to go along with it. And Lee Haney won that contest as well, but John took second place. So that was the year where John really came out and people were like, wanted to know who this young guy from Australia was. So in our interview on bodybuildinglegendshow.com website, we talked to John about his career as a professional bodybuilder, the highs and the lows. John talks about some of the difficulty he had trying to reach his peak and some of the changes in the judging as he went along with his pro career. And then John finally ended his bodybuilding career by winning the 1994 NABBA Mr. Universe in the professional division, where he was actually at his biggest body weight ever. And we talk about that too, about how John gained some size. So I did get some comments on YouTube about the video itself. So I wanted to read some of those just to acknowledge people who watched the video. This guy's name was Yeah Right 825. He says, wow, I remember John back in the day. Great physique. Guy Graham, who watches a lot of our videos, says, who is next on the interview list, John? How about the Black Prince? Well, I have still been talking to Rick Valente, and Rick is trying to get Robbie Robinson, on the show. We are hoping on that. But the next interview that will be coming up on the bodybuildinglegendshow.com website is Lee LaBrada. And I am working on part one of that right now. And I had a great interview with Lee. So that's going to be a two-parter as well, because we got so many video clips to put in there. So in part one of Lee's interview, we are going to be talking about how he got started in bodybuilding. Of course, Lee was born in Cuba, and he moved to the United States when he was 2 years old, first in Chicago, and then he moved to Florida. And in this part of the interview, we're going to talk about Lee's amateur career. He did really well at the 1984 NPC USA, where Phil Williams actually beat him, and they were in the same class. And we're going to talk about that. And then the 1984 NPC Nationals, where Lee took fifth. And then, of course, 1985 was Lee's breakout year, because he won his class at the Nationals, and then he won the Universe. And then we're going to talk about Lee's pro career, competing in the Night of the Champions, his very first pro show. He won that one in 1986, and then competing in the Mr. Olympia in 1987 and 1988. So part one of the interview will start from when Lee started bodybuilding all the way up until 1988. So we've got some great pictures and some great video clips in there. So I will let you guys know when that's coming out. That should be out probably next month in August. Let's see what other comments we got here. I told him, Guy Graham said, Robbie seems so cool and laid back. They must know that you're series mate and know that it's part historical recording of their time in the sport. I can't see why they wouldn't want to do an interview unless they speak for money or something. I mean, your reputation with the series and your natural bodybuilding career is highly regarded. Some people are more private, I guess. Yeah, some people don't want to do the interviews, and some people do. So I'll keep trying, Guy, and Robbie hopefully will come around. Ronaldo Sousa said, I think he was a little party animal, talking about John Torelli. The Son of Krypton said, thumbs up, another top interview. Chris Widener said, strange world, quality is rarely seen. This video should have a million views. People that love training need to spread the word. Excellent as always. All the best, and thank you. All right. Thank you, Chris. So those were the comments that we got. And I also want to bring a mention to Scott Barron. Scott is our first patron on the Bodybuilding Legend Show. And as I mentioned last week, we are now with Patreon. So if you go to my website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, if you look in the upper right-hand corner, it says become a patron. So you can actually donate to the show if you so choose. And I really would appreciate it if you guys did. That helps keep the production costs going, and we can help keep doing the show each week, our podcast, and as well as our video interviews. So Scott became a patron of the show, so I wanted to mention him and give him a little shout-out. And as a patron, he also gets a 10% discount on anything he orders off the bodybuildinglegendshow.com website. And Scott actually did order my book, Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1, and he actually mentioned it on his Facebook page. He said, being a history teacher by trade who enjoys weightlifting, I'm happy to sponsor John Hansen's Bodybuilding Legends show. John has continuously demonstrated an in-depth knowledge of the art and sport of bodybuilding throughout his thorough interviews with the giants of the sport. His interviews are conducted with his own expertise of being a champion competitor himself, bolstered by his vast knowledge of the rich history of the Iron Game. John Hansen understands the art of asking well-prepared and meaningful questions. Most importantly, he also allows the interviewee to speak freely with a flow that is not hindered by needless interjections. An honorary doctorate degree of bodybuilding history is owed due to John's lasting contributions of preserving the history of bodybuilding. All right. Thank you very much, Scott. Thank you for those kind words. And also thank you for being the first patron of the BodybuildingLegendsShow.com website. Like I said, if any of you guys want to make a monthly donation, I would really appreciate it. Just go to our website, Bodybuilding Legends Show, and look in the upper right-hand corner and click on the patronage link, and you'll be directed to that page. So thank you for considering it. And speaking of books, I am working on Volume 2, The Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 2, as we speak. I was working on it a little bit more today. So I'm hoping to release that next month. And for all those who are patrons to the show, we'll also get sneak previews. So I will send anybody who donates money who is a patron of the show, they will get a preview of the Lee Labrada interview. They will get a clip, a video clip of that in their email before the show is actually released. And also I'm going to give them a preview of the book, the new book, Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 2. They will also get a preview. So that's some of the stuff the patrons will get for donating to the show. All right, I also want to mention we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they are there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa at 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. And when you do that, please mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and you will get a free consultation, and you'll also get 20% off your order. So their office number again is 813-922-8939. They'll work with anybody in the United States. You don't have to be in the Florida area, or you can go to their website, flalternativemeds.com. All right, so here we go with our interview with Phil Williams. And please, guys, feel free to email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com after you listen to the show and tell me your thoughts and your questions, if you have any questions, or if you have any suggestions for any future shows or for future seasons on the show. Please let me know your thoughts. I always love getting your emails. All right, so here we go. Here is our interview with Phil Williams, 1985 MPC Nationals winner, about these old school days in bodybuilding. All right, welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I have my friend Phil Williams on the line with us today. Phil, of course, was one of the best MPC National winners ever in 1985. And then he went on to win the Chicago Pro Show in 1988, and we are talking about old school bodybuilding today on the show. So Phil has many years training at the Old Schools Gym back in the 1980s, and before that, he was training in St. Louis at George Turner's Gym. So we thought we'd have Phil back and talk about some stories about the good old days. How you doing, Phil?
I'm good, John. I'm good.
All right. Well, first of all, congratulations, Phil, again, for getting that Muscle Beach Hall of Fame at Memorial Day about a month ago. That had to be a good honor, huh?
Oh, that was great, John. I never expected that. So, yeah, that was definitely very good. Very good.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great to see you recognized for your physique and the career that you had, you know, because I think you're sort of Joe Wheatley called you the enigma. So it's sort of like you're an unknown champion to a lot of people, you know?
Right.
So what was the reason for that nickname, Phil? I mean, he mentioned that George Turner gave that to you, right?
Yeah, George gave me that. Oh, that was back in the 70s. I'm going to say about 77, 78. Okay. What I did was I used to leave high school in Kansas City, Missouri, mm-hmm. at 2:35 in the afternoon. I'd get on the highway, and St. Louis is across state, right? So
okay.
It's about 265 miles, highway miles. Get alone.
Wow.
It's probably be, you know, 280, almost 300 miles by the time you get into the city.
Wow.
And I'd get there Friday night. I'd train Friday night. I'd sleep in my car. I'd train Saturday morning. I'd rest, go back to my car, or hang out in the gym with the guys, train Saturday mm-hmm. night, train Sunday morning, and then Sunday afternoon, I'd head back and get back to school for Monday morning.
How many hours of a drive was that?
That's about a five-hour drive.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah. And back then, the speed limit was 55, so right. it may have taken longer. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I did that for months before anyone knew what I was doing. They say, well, I thought you lived in Kansas City. I said, yeah, I do. And they all, and I was wintertime. One of the guys that worked there saw me in the car trying to sleep. I was trying to stay warm in blankets, right? Mm-hmm. It's like probably in January or February or something, one of the colder months. So he comes up and goes, knocks on the window, goes, what are you doing? So from there, he brought me into the gym, let me sleep there. George had a loft up on the second floor. Mm-hmm. And I slept up there. So he finds out about it later on. George does, of course.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's when he invites me to come stay at his house. And there, the story start at that point. That's when the craziest time of my life was being around George.
Wow. So what was the gym like at 17 training? It had to be a great gym, huh? For you to travel that far every week.
Actually, tell you what, it was one of the best gyms I've ever seen. To this day, it's still better than most 99% of the gyms that I see now.
Wow.
It had old school equipment. He got his blueprint for his equipment from Dan Howard. And Dan Howard, Joe Gold, and George had the same blueprint. So it was the same equipment. It was very heavy duty. I mean, it was manufactured. It was called the Iron Company back then. If you look on all the pulleys, it said Iron Company.
Okay.
And when I went out to Joe Gold's gym later on, years later, it was the same equipment.
Oh, really?
So, So there was nothing like it. Nothing like it. I mean, everything else in comparison was terrible.
Was it a big gym, Phil?
George's gym. Oh, it was huge. It was a former, it was an old Kroger grocery store.
Holy shit.
And in the back of the gym, he had the iron factory, and he had equipment made, and he sold equipment out of the gym.
Oh, okay.
So the gym was actually a show floor. It was actually a show floor. Guys that wanted to come equipped. The equipment was so clean, you could eat off the floor. George was very anal about keeping, you didn't drop anything, you didn't do anything, you didn't touch a mirror. He would throw you out if you touched a mirror.
Really? Wow.
I kid you not. I saw him throw people out left, right, and center all the time for any reason. Not wearing the right shoes, not wearing the right gym clothes. I mean, you name it. If he was in a bad mood, it was even worse. That's some crazy stories that came out of there.
How old was he back then, Phil?
I think George was about 56, and I would have been 17. Okay. So, I was 17, 18. So George had to be 55, 56 years old. Still in good shape. Okay. He still worked out.
Yeah, I know. He was in good shape for a long time when he got older.
Yeah. And, I mean, there were guys that used to come from Chicago. There was a guy that came from Chicago. I don't remember the guy's name, of course. This was years ago. And he drove down from Chicago to St. Louis to have George take a look at him. George looked at him for about 30 seconds. It was in his office. The guy took off his shirt. And he said, George, he said, you don't have to. You don't have to. He goes, I'd recommend golf or tennis for a guy like you. He goes, I'm sorry you wasted your time, and threw the guy out of the office.
Oh, my God. Golf or tennis.
So, I mean, he was nuts, man. I remember him doing some of the craziest things in the gym. He'd be in his office, and he had a microphone, right?
Okay. So
he'd get on the microphone, and he'd see a guy doing chins across the gym and told him, hey, guy, it's like a spider hanging there. That's just the way he talked, right? He'd pick fun. He'd make fun of anybody. You couldn't take it, and you got angry at him. Oh, screw you, George. Hey, get out of my fucking gym, guy. Whose name's on the yawning outside? I don't need you here. Get out of here. There were groups of people who opened gyms in St. Louis with the number of people that he threw out and did well.
Oh, really?
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So who was training there when you were 17? Were there any big names there?
Anyone that you would have heard of today. I tell you, one of the best he had was a lightweight by the name of Cliff Coons.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you remember him.
He was one of the best.
Jimmy Seeger. I was there for a while. He did well in Missouri. There were a few guys, but no one that you would really know. I can remember the Cocoons would have been the best.
Yeah. When you were going down there on the weekends and training when you were 17, the atmosphere was really good when you went on the weekends.
Oh, it was a hardcore atmosphere. Yeah. I mean, you don't see that today. I mean, it's all changed.
Right.
But I mean, these guys trained hard. I mean, you know, everything was basic compound, and George had two or three of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you never had to wait in line for anything. The gym was never really crowded.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great place.
You were getting in like four workouts over the weekend, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the gym, compared to the gym that I used in Overland Park, Kansas, or the YMCA, mm-hmm. I mean, it was there was no comparison.
Yeah. Didn't Ken Waller train there too for a while?
Yeah, George put on a show in 78. It was the Heart of the Midwest. We had a powerlifting meet, and he had a bodybuilding competition. And I met Ken Waller there in 88. I met Mincer there. I met Ron Tufel there. I met Boyer Coe there. I met Joe Weider there. I met Bob Hoffman there, right?
Wow. Mm.
All these different guys all came to George's show.
When those guys came into town to guest pose, would they train at his gym also?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I learned a lot from Mincer training there. Actually, I learned more from Mincer than anyone else.
Oh, okay.
Spent time with him, had lunch with him. I mean, got to know him. He stayed there about 4 or 5 days, maybe almost a week.
Okay. Did you watch him train, or did you get to train with him?
I watched him train, trained with him a little bit, yeah. So I learned a whole lot from Mike.
Yeah.
And that's the time he was at he's very popular. That was the year he won the Universe.
78, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it was a good time. I mean, it was a very good place to be.
When did you meet Ron Tufel? Because he was a great bodybuilder. A lot of younger guys don't know of Ron Tufel, and sometimes I'll put a picture of him up on Facebook, and they're like, wow, who's that guy? And I try to tell people, that guy was unbelievable at like 18, 19 years old. He was winning national titles.
Sure. Ron would have been, in 78, Ron would have been like, let's see, he won the Teenage Mr. America in 1975 at 18 or 19. He was like 21, 22 years old.
Yeah.
In 78. I mean, he was amazing physique.
Right. Everybody thought he was going to win the America that year.
That year, he lost to Tony Pearson.
Right.
You remember that? Yeah, that show was held in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to that show, and
he did.
Was just screaming his head off. Yeah, yep.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first Mr. America. And, we thought Ron Tufel would win, and Tony Pearson took it from him.
Yeah. But Pearson used to train at George's gym too, right?
He did. He was there in 76. And then in 76, he came out here to California and started training at Goes in Venice when it was on 2nd Street.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron came later on after, this was 2 years after that. And that was the last AAU, that was the last AAU Mr. America. No, Ron went back in 79. But that was his third. He went 76, 77, 78. He won the lightweight each
short
year.
Class.
It was a short class. I'm sorry, I take that back. He had the short class back then. You didn't have weight classes.
And he beat Tom Platz that year. And Tom looked really good.
He beat Tom Platz all three. He beat Tom in 77, 78, and I'm going to say 76 also.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then Tom got on the Universe because Ron left the building, and then Tom posed against Tony, and then,
You know what happened? I don't know if you remember this. This is what happened. Tony Pearson, they had a pose down for the American team to go to the World Championship, so the Mr. Universe, right?
Right.
And Tom Platz, with a different set of judges, turns around and beats Tony Pearson.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Tony took off to Europe and went to NAVA for a while.
And they were in the same class because in the height classes, Tony was in the medium height class, but Tom was in the short class because he was heavier, bigger.
Right, right. So they ended up in the same weight class, which would have been for the World Championship for the Mr. Universe.
And then Tom ends up winning the Mr. Universe and turns pro, and he's in the Olympia next year. Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever get to meet Tony out there, or was he gone by the time you got there?
No, Tony was gone by the time I got there. Tony, I didn't meet Tony until I came out here.
Yeah.
Or I met Tony in Europe. And out here, but I never saw Tony in St. Louis. That was before my time.
Okay. Yeah, because Tony, I think, went to California in the late 70s, right? When he was
young. Yeah, 76. Yeah, he came out in 76.
I think he won the America when he was like 21, right? Wasn't he really young too?
He won it in 78. He was 21 years old. Yeah, he's probably the second youngest winner next to Casey.
Right, exactly. Besides Cliff Coons, you really didn't see anybody else who went on to
not
national
really.
Tournaments.
Now, I met a guy you'd know that used to come down there. Remember Mario Neves?
Oh, yeah, Mario Neves from Chicago, yeah.
Neves, yeah. He used to come down.
Mm-hmm.
George knew him very well. And there's another guy, I don't know if he was from, he may have been from Illinois, but a guy by the name of Houston Shep.
Okay.
Who had a good physique. You may not remember. Okay, yeah, you may not remember him. But Mario you'd remember because he's from Chicago area, I think.
Yeah, Mario's winning everything in Chicago for a while.
Right, yeah. Well, he won the Junior America one year. Then he came down to the Heart of America and got beat by the guy I just mentioned.
Oh, okay.
Which was already Junior Mr. America, which didn't make sense to me at the time.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. I remember that Heart of the America contest. I remember
that
when I was a kid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had powerlifting. Mike Bridges came down and won his class.
Oh, okay.
And he had a few other big name guys during the 70s. You know, these were real big name guys.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, and I think
had a lot of influence.
I think Mario went up against Tony that year in 78. I think that was at either the Junior America or the Junior USA, and I think Tony beat him.
That would have been 77 because. Tony won the Junior USA and the Junior Mr. America in 77. He won both of them.
Oh, okay.
So that was a
good
show.
America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so he won the American in 78, a year later.
Right. So when George Turner found out you were sleeping upstairs in the loft, then he took you into his house?
He took me into his house, gave me a bedroom. I mean, he was a good guy. George was funny, though. He was the type of guy who would, if he liked you, he'd do that for you. He'd do anything in the world for you. But at the same time, I became his whipping boy.
Hmm.
I mean, if you know what I'm saying, I don't know if you know what I mean by that, but he, in a sense, he would like you, but he's very abusive in a sense.
Yeah, yeah. So George was the
abusive
one.
I mean, he wouldn't touch you physically, I mean, but he, you know, hey, this, he'd call you this, he'd have, you know.
Yeah.
His language was just unbelievable. No wonder his kids, I never saw the kids in the house. They'd all kind of scatter when he'd come home, right? And his wife, she was abused. I mean, he was a very abusive guy all around.
Wow.
And living in his house was, it was cool, but it wasn't cool.
Yeah. So you would just stay there on the weekends then when you came up for the weekend?
Pretty much. And then once I got out of high school, I moved there and tried to get an apartment right away. And Cliff Coons and I actually shared a small apartment for a short time.
Oh, really? Okay. Hmm.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you look at gyms, back in the 70s. I mean, we had one in Kansas that was quite good, actually. It was called Moffitt's Gym. I don't know if you ever heard of that. Mm-hmm. He actually did quite well. But other than that, I mean, you know, you had George Turner's. This is before all the gym chains.
Yeah.
He were evolved like Gold's Gym. He had the franchises, all the powerhouse gyms, the franchises before all that.
Before all that, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, none of that exists. So, yeah.
So, were you competing back then, Phil?
Oh, yeah. In 70, let me see. I took second in the Mr. Missouri in 77 at 17 years old.
And that was the Open, right? Mr. Missouri. That wasn't the
That was the Open, right, because you didn't have a teenage in that state during that time. I don't know if they ever had. Then I took 78. I won the Mr. Mid USA novice.
Okay.
Teenage Mr. Mid USA.
Okay.
That was in 78. In 79, it was the Teenage Mr. Coastal USA,
mm-hmm.
where I beat Lee Haney.
Okay.
And then 3 months later, I take fifth in the medium class of the Teenage Mr. America, and Haney wins the tall class in the overall.
Yeah.
And then in 1980, as a teenager, I went back to Atlanta and won the Mr. Coastal USA as a teenager.
Okay, gotcha.
So quite a few shows as a teenage. I'm sorry.
Where was the Coastal USA? Was that Atlanta, Georgia?
I used to put that on out of Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you did that Teenage America
shows.
When you did the Teenage America, who were you up against, though?
Okay, guys, you probably heard of Frank Pantoja, who was Rory Liedermeyer's guy.
California.
Won the class.
Yeah.
Doug Bagnoli.
Yeah,
took second.
Still around. Yeah.
There's a guy named Andy Lopadotti that came out of New York.
Yeah, huge guy. Real big guy.
Gym. Now, you know, I might have him twisted. I think maybe, I might say that Andy may have taken second. Doug third, and a guy named Joe Fulco. He'd already won the Teenage Mr. USA.
Mm-hmm.
took fourth, and I came in fifth. So, I mean, shit, man, it was some stiff competition for a teenage show.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I mean, the best teenagers I've ever seen. I haven't seen anything like that since, and I tell people to this day, I've never seen teenagers like that.
Yeah, I know. I remember all those guys. I remember that contest. I remember seeing the results of that contest in the magazines.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah.
So I left there butt hurt, of course, you know, I'd already beaten Annie. But at the same time, I looked at him and I said, shit, this is crazy.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. So
Lee Haney won the overall.
It was a good show.
Yeah. And he looked way better. He looked way better than when you beat him a few months before, right?
Well, I would say it was 4 months earlier. I don't know how much you can change in 4 months, but I mean, he looked better. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, funny, the first time I met Lee at the Teenage Coaster USA, I thought he was in the open class, right? Because the guy looked, he didn't look like a teenager. He looks exactly as he does now. And the funny thing is, if you look at him now and look at him back then, he hasn't aged.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, he looks like a man.
Sense, does it? But you know what I said, right? Yeah, he looks the same as he did.
Yeah, he looked like a man when he was a teenager. I remember that. His face looked like a man.
Exactly. And he still looks the same.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He still looks the same. Yeah, that is crazy.
So what did his physique look like back then? Could you tell that this guy was going to be a Mr. Olympia winner?
Oh, I mean, yeah, you could. I mean, yeah, you would never think 8-time Mr. Olympia, of course, but I mean, yeah, you could tell that. I mean, he had all the potential. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was sure. Very balanced. I mean, very well built.
Yeah, he was like
he had the type of muscle maturity that you don't see on a teenager.
Yeah, exactly.
You wasn't he like, so, yeah.
He weighed like 218 pounds or something, right?
I think he said he weighed 210. 210?
210, okay.
Yeah, like 210.
Yeah.
Which he won the Nationals, let's see, we're going from 79 to 82. He was 230 at the Nationals, so yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's about right.
So what did George teach you about training, Phil? I know he sort of took you under his wing, right?
Yeah, he did. This is the funny thing about George. This is going to be a crazy story. George, I overtrained very easily, first of all. So the routine that George had me on, and it was the same one he had Tony Pearson on, was to do 10 sets of squats 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Wow.
10 sets of squats. That's 30 sets of squats a week. And then I can't remember how the back went, but I mean, it was chest, back, shoulders, and then arms between that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when Mensah came, Mensah talked about overtraining. And I started listening right away because I was so overtrained with George.
Yeah.
And I said, well, George has me doing this. I was sitting with Mike, and Mike said, well, you can't, nobody can train like that. And I just looked at him. I said, really? I mean, nothing's wrong with me? He said, no, you need to do this. And the routine Mike put me on, I started following.
Okay.
Right? So I said, oh, this is going to piss George off. George turns around and says to everyone at the seminar, Mike Mensah is the brightest guy I've ever met. You need to listen to this.
Wow.
Name. That's just how George saw it. He said, this is the most intelligent man in bodybuilding.
Wow.
And so I listened to Mike after that.
Hmm.
And George really never said a thing.
Hmm. Okay.
George left it alone.
Yeah. So Mensah
really
gave us.
He liked Mike a whole lot. He talked about Mike all the time. At that time, I think Mike Mensah, actually, he's the only guy who's come to George's gym to do a seminar. No one else did, only Mike.
Hmm. Okay.
So he had respect for Mike for whatever reason.
Hmm, okay.
But George would have you overtraining. I mean, it was 6 day on, one off.
Right. So what did Mensah recommend? Like 4 days a week total?
Usually each body part about once a week.
Yeah.
A lot
like the guys are training today.
Yeah. I mean, I do it. I still use that routine. When I train each body part, let's say every 10 or sometime it can spill over to 11 days.
Yeah.
You know. So, and that's it. And even then, recovery can be, recovery can be hard sometimes, depending on what you're going through, other stress levels outside of the gym, just whatever's happening in your life, you know?
Yeah, it seems like recovery is individual, because I know some people train, or they recover faster than others, you know? I mean, it seems like it's all individual.
Sure.
Yeah.
They're very individual. So the thing is that most guys realize that it's good to have a training partner, but two guys may not work well together for that reason.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And one guy may, you know, I've trained with guys in the past, and you know, it's hard to train. It's hard to have a good training partner that you equal with, equal recovery, equal strength, equal, you know what I'm saying, where you guys can really flow together.
Exactly. So when I know Mike believes training to failure, did you do that also with your training when you
I tried to, yes, as much as I could to positive failure.
Yeah.
And then if you had someone there to assist you with like forced reps, or I could use a rest pause every once in a while, right? Wait like 10, 15 seconds and then do as many reps as I could again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for those that don't know what a rest pause is, that's where you put the weight down, wait a few seconds, and then you do another rep, right?
Catch your breath and do as many as you, yes, exactly. Do as many as you can. If you can get an additional 2 or 3 reps, that's great.
Yeah.
And count that as one set, not 2 sets, of course. So, right. Yeah.
So you just keep going and going and going until the muscle completely fails.
Exactly. What I mean by positive failure, I guess a lot, everybody knows what it means. You just don't get to 8. And I see most guys, they get to a number and let's say that number is 8 and they're automatically, or that discomfort. They use a number where it's discomfort and that's it.
Yeah,
right. You just started that set. Why did you stop?
Right, exactly. Because I got a chance to train with you, Phil, when I was in California, and I know you don't go super heavy, so there's other ways of training the muscle to failure instead of going. Because when I think people think of Mensur, they think super heavy weight for to
Mensur
train.
Was strong.
Yeah,
Mike was very strong. He had the structure. I'm not very strong. I've got a medium frame. I've got medium to light bone structure. I've got long arms. I've got long legs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not built for power. So what I usually did, what I found out that worked best was I had a slower velocity.
Okay.
Right? And that time under tension increased the intensity of the exercise.
Yeah.
So I would as slow as humanly possible. I could be under the leg press for 3 minutes. But I'm pushing slow. Every rep is slow. The time under tension is intensity.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's intensity that's going to make the difference.
Right.
And if you take that intensity and that slow velocity to failure, man, that burns. That's a whole lot of discomfort.
Yeah, I noticed when I trained with you.
I tried to get people to do that. Yeah, go ahead.
When I was training with you, I noticed you had perfect form. You were doing everything perfect. Very slow tempo, you said.
Sure. Well, I'm a form fanatic. I've always been a form fanatic. I know it's going to be strong, so I'm going to do it as perfectly as possible.
Yeah.
Form the exercise as perfectly as possible, and that's what I do.
So when you started your career and you were a thinner bodybuilder in the beginning, obviously, when you were a teenager, and the way to build size was that kind of training, right? That's the routine that built your size.
Yeah, that worked for me. I mean,
yeah.
That worked very well for me. And to this day, I don't have any real injuries, let's put it that way. There's nothing I can't do.
Yeah.
You know, so I've never had any shoulder issues. I've never had any back issues, knee problems, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting because you were a big bodybuilder when you got to the national level, you know, when you were winning the nationals.
Right. Well, I grew very easily. Maybe it's the type of training or the intensity, but I grew without having to ever use heavy weights to do so. I tell people I've never picked up a pair of 100-pound dumbbells except to move them out of the way.
right? Really?
I've never had to squat, 700 pounds, 600 pounds. I've never had to do that. I never could do that. I've got small hips and a small waist.
Right.
So that's not going to happen. That kind of power is not there.
Yeah.
But all my movements are just extremely fluid. And like I said, with slow velocity and high intensity to failure, I mean, that did it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What do you think of when you see Ronnie Coleman now with all the injuries he's had?
I feel terrible. I feel bad for him. But, he doesn't feel sorry for himself, does he? Because I've heard him say, I'd do it again. If I had the chance to do it, I would do it again. For Mr. Olympias, he said, I'd do it again. So, hey, that's the price you pay.
Yeah.
He doesn't feel bad for him. He doesn't feel sorry for himself. So I'm not going to feel sorry for him.
Right.
No, I mean, incredible physique. And I watched some of the footage back then when he was doing that stuff. And I'm thinking, man, but I would have never imagined he'd be going through what he's gone through now.
Me neither. I mean, I know you put your body through stuff, man. I didn't think I don't know if it's the surgeries he's had that's really messed up his back that bad. But
I can count the surgeries. Yeah, he's had like, so I'm going to say five surgeries.
Yeah, I think more than that. I think he's been like eight
he
or something.
Not, he may not be finished. Yeah, he may not be finished. Who knows?
I know. Yeah, it's terrible. Then when you look at someone like you or Lee Labrada or Lee Haney, I mean, you guys were old school guys too. You were around before he was, and you're still training good and you're still healthy.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's a type of training style. I guess it's going to make a difference. I see footage now of guys doing bent over rows, but I mean, we're talking about what looks like 405, and I'm thinking, how is that possible?
right. I know.
But you see it, you know, or T-bar rows with the 45s all the way to the end of the bar, right? And I'm thinking, and it's funny. Years ago, I had a guy, I can't remember who I was training with. It might have been Brian Buchanan. We were in Germany training, and he put the 45s on there on a T-bar. And I said, no, I said, take those off. And he looked at me, he goes, what do you mean? I said, let's use 25s. That way we get a fuller range of motion, right?
Yeah.
Having shorter plates or smaller plates, you get a fuller range of motion. So you get that extra 3 inches where you can squeeze your back in a contracted position.
Right.
So, I mean, just little things like that that make a big difference in the end.
Yeah.
You know, if I did T-bar rows, we had one at Go's Gym. They just carried off about 4 months ago. There's a perfect piece of equipment. There's nothing wrong with it. For some reason, we come in the next day and they change equipment. They bring in some new equipment, take out some old, and they take it. They don't replace it. They just take it. No idea why. And I had my wife using it. My wife's my training partner.
Yeah.
And we used to love that thing. But these old exercises are the basic compound exercises is what works.
Yeah.
Now, you see, of course, that's the exercises today I've never seen done before. I don't know who created them or where they come from. And I don't know. I doubt the effectiveness of them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you see that too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I see some lines of equipment. I'm like, the guys who developed this, they don't work out. There's no way they will work out because it just doesn't work.
Years ago. Know? Most of the guys that design equipment aren't bodybuilders. They don't work out.
No. You could tell because you can't use it. You know, if you try to do an exercise, it's like there's a press behind the neck where you can't do the presses behind the neck because the things are too close to the pad, the stance where you take the weight off. It's too close to the pad. So when you try to do it, you can't do it. There's no room in there, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what it, about George's equipment that he had back then. Like I said, it was some of the best I've ever. Even to this day, I would select it over anything I've seen since.
Wow, amazing!
Yeah.
So when did you go to California then, Phil, and start training over?
The first time I went out there was in '78 when Goes was on Second Street.
Okay.
And I stayed there for a couple of weeks. I knew Ron Tufel.
So you were a teenager.
I was out there with him a little bit. I knew Mike, of course.
Uh-huh.
So I hung out there for a couple of weeks and got out there. The second time I went out there, first time I actually moved out there was in 81.
Okay.
And by then they'd moved on to Hampton where they are now.
Okay. So the first time was in Santa Monica, right? On Second Street?
Yes, Santa Monica, Second Street. It was next to, I'll never forget, the Pussycat Theater or something.
How was that? How was that, Jim? I've never been to that one.
I was small. I mean, it was.
Was it? Okay.
I don't know. Maybe 5,000 square foot.
Oh wow! Yeah.
You know. I mean, it was nothing really.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it was a crazy place. I mean, it was. Samir was there. I met Samir in '77 when he would guest post for George. So I mean, I knew a lot. By that time, I'd already known some of these guys.
Yeah.
And then when I went out there in '81, of course. That's when it was a place that's where kids, it was amazing because kids would come from all over the world. And I literally mean all over the world, not over the country or within the country. We're talking about from all over the world and train there. I met kids from Germany, from Sweden, from Italy. I mean, and these kids were like all my age.
Wow.
All about the same age, 20, 21 years old.
Right.
And they all come out there to be bodybuilders. I'm thinking, this is one of the craziest places I've ever seen, right? But then I met Chris Dickerson and I got to know everybody that was there during that particular time. And there was a number of people there.
So the first time you went out there when it was on in Santa Monica, you just went out there for a couple of weeks. But this time you moved out to California.
It was like a vacation. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then donating. From there, I made my plans to come back as soon as I could put it together.
So you were living out there in 81. So tell me some of the guys you saw back then, because that had to be a great time. You probably saw Tom Platz, right? And Samir, like you said.
I saw Tom, Samir. I met Mike Christian there. He'd just come down from Oregon. I believe it was Oregon.
Yep, yep.
There was Andreas Colling. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I said Chris Dickerson. Robbie Robinson. Oh, man. Who else was there? The Barbarian Brothers, of course.
Yeah. What were they like?
Of course, it was a show every time they were in the gym, right?
Right.
So it was like Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey, in the place, right?
Right.
But the crazy thing is, it was one room. You know how you have the three big rooms now? You had the first room, that was the gym.
Right.
So everybody's literally in the same room.
Right.
And these guys I trained about 7 in the morning, and you come about that time, you'd see guys either coming in or just leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all in there about the same time. Mike and Ray Mincer was there. I trained with Ray for a while. Ali Mala I used to work out with. He was a training partner for a while.
Okay.
Wow. Man, I mean, everyone was there. If you had a name at that time, you probably would have been there.
Yeah.
In and out of there.
How was Ray Mincer? I heard he was super strong.
He was. And I trained with him. That's what I'm saying. We weren't a good fit. He was incredibly strong.
How about Casey Viator? Did you ever see him?
Casey trained very heavy. Yeah, Casey was there. I met Casey in 79 and got to know him. And I kind of kept in touch with him. Yeah, he was very strong. This guy trained extremely heavy. He did barbell curls with 2 1/4. Olympic barbell, 245s on each side.
Right.
Wow. Of course, I mean, his form wasn't the best.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he was very strong.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, another guy I got to know out there who we thought would, you know, was going to be was Gunnar Raspo. He was a good friend of mine out there.
He came
out there.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I got to know Gunnar real well. So it was quite a number of guys, man. It was a good time.
So Gunnar was living in California for a while, huh?
He lived with Ed Connors for a short time. Ed Connors had a house that was about, right off the boardwalk.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go there and knock on the door, and Gunnar would come out, and he and I'd hang out. I took him. I had a little car back then, a little Maverick, and I used to drive him around, get what he needed. So we became real good friends. He and I hung out together quite a bit.
Okay, cool. How about Tom Platz? Yeah, did you ever get to see Tom do his legendary squatting routines?
Yes, it's breathtaking, unbelievable to watch a guy go through a leg workout. Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, I've seen footage on YouTube. You can find some old footage of him doing squats, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
And I've seen him probably do take 315 and knock out 50 reps.
Jeez. Yeah. I was going to ask
like
you.
A piston. Yeah.
I was going to ask you if he was going like real heavy or if he was doing like a more moderate weight
both. He'd go as heavy as 505 for like 15, 20 reps.
Damn, really?
Imagine, 505 for 20 reps. And it just was crazy.
And when he squatted, he went all the way down because we've all seen Tom.
He went all the way down. Well, his hamstrings hit his calves, and that you know his hamstrings and his calves were huge. So
right.
It's kind of like they bounced off each other, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, but if you look at anatomically, he was perfectly designed for squat. He had the right waist width, mm-hmm. and his thighs were as long as they were wide. If that makes sense.
Right, right, right.
So yeah, it was just like a piston firing.
Yeah, that's exactly what he looked like.
His intensity was through the charts.
Yeah.
Never seen anything like that.
Yeah, you know,
I don't think anybody trains like that to this day.
I hate all these cell phones and everything, but I kind of wish people would have had cell phones back then because there would have been a lot more footage of him doing those incredible squat routines. Because I look, you know, you see online and stuff, he's at this one seminar, I think the Joe Weider camp, and there's footage of him from there doing leg routines, but there's not a lot of stuff like from 81. I'd love to see from 81 when he was at his peak at that Olympia, you know, him just doing those incredible squatting routines.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we didn't have, I mean, the only people that had cameras back then were photographers, right?
Yeah. I
tell people that all the time. People say, well, why don't you have a lot of pictures? And I'm thinking, if I would have been in the gym training and you would have come up to me with a camera and I didn't know who you were, I would have said, you get that out of here, right?
Right.
I'm not ready to be photographed. I don't want any pictures.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You're not ready. You're not thinking about that. That's the last thing you want is someone to start taking pictures of you. But nowadays, I mean, that's the thing. Everything's covered, you know.
Yeah, I think the same thing.
It's a whole, different time.
When I was in my 20s or 30s and I was real bulked up and having really incredible workouts, I wish I would have taken video of that or pictures of that. But you're right. I mean, nobody took cameras in the gym back then. I mean, I would take a camera in if I was getting ready for a show or something and I was taking pictures every month or something like that. But other than that, you don't take a camera in the gym and train. And you never had a video camera. Nobody ever did that.
Of course. Nobody had one. Unless you were a filmmaker. That's funny because you look back and I'm thinking of all the pictures I could have had. But I'm lucky to find the ones that I've been able to find.
Right. Exactly. I just interviewed Rick Valente not too long ago, and he was telling me about Gold's back then. He said it was one room, like you said. So he said everybody was in this one room, you know, and he said the intensity was crazy.
Oh, it was. Hey, Rick got me my first job in Venice.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
At a parking lot. It was a place called Charmer's Market, and it was like a little winery restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he got me my first job watching cars.
Okay.
And that was in Santa Monica, a block off on Pacific Avenue.
Okay. How was life in California back then, Phil? Because I know it's got to be so much different then. Yeah.
Oh, so much different. I mean, just a different time. I lived one block west of Gold's Gym. There's some apartments that are on a corner, mm-hmm. right? And it's across the street from the bus depot, right across the street from the parking lot, of course.
Okay.
Catty corner, sort of. And I lived there. And I think we paid $350 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like four guys living there, of course. But, I mean, it was a good time, man. It was a whole different – I tell my wife all the time. I say, well, this used to be this way and that used to be that way. And you'd come in and Pete Grimkowski would be at the counter, right? And then or Samir would be at the counter talking to Serge Nubre. You could come in at any time and see it. You'd like to see anybody, right?
Yeah.
And so it was a whole different world. I mean, it was actually a bodybuilding gym.
Right.
And
that's what Rick said, too. He said that you don't really see too many bodybuilders there anymore. It's just more personal trainers. But back then, it was all bodybuilders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got more personal trainers there than Ringling Brothers has clowns.
Right. Exactly.
I mean that sincerely. Yeah. It's crazy. But, I mean, you come in, and it was kind of a place to hang out. You go there in the evening, and there'd be guys outside talking in the parking lot. I mean, you could see bodybuilders all the time, just bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And you see the photographers come in and they'd say, you know, the photo shoots of what pictures you saw in Muscle Builder or Flex.
Yeah.
You know, you'd see photo shoots. I mean, you're around the guys all the time. And everybody was cool, you know. It was just a different time, I guess.
Yeah. How was Samir back then? I mean, because he was at his peak around that time also.
Oh, yeah. Samir, that was in 82, Samir took fifth in the Olympia, the 82 Olympia, I want to say, right?
Fourth.
And I saw Samir compete in Sweden. He took second to McCauley.
Yeah.
And that was in 82. Let's see, 83, he won the Olympia. Now, I lived with Samir in the late 81.
All right.
When I first came out to California, he put me up in his apartment for about 6 weeks until I was able to find a place. And Rick Valente got me my first job.
Okay.
So we were all helping each other, man. It was a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Samir, like I said, Samir helped me out. Ray Mincer took me around. Mike used to take me to coffee at the Rose Cafe to hang out with him.
Yeah.
And I knew all – it was amazing because I knew all these guys at an early age.
Yeah, amazing.
And so I was able to learn, you know, learn as much as I could from all of them.
Yeah. What was Samir's training like? Did he go pretty heavy?
He trained moderately heavy. I wouldn't say real heavy, moderately heavy.
Okay.
I trained with Samir a bit. I ended up training with Ali Mala. Samir had a workout partner. And so I ended up training with Ali Mala more, who was a lot stronger than I was also. He had a wider hip base. So I used to do legs with Ali. And I used to wonder, I'm thinking, well, we're the same height and almost the same weight. How come he can squat much more? Well, he had a wider hip base, right? And shorter limbs, shorter legs.
Right.
So I started learning all this. It was funny. I was squatting with Ali. I'll tell you a story. And we were in World Gym.
Mm-hmm.
And Ali knocks out like 15 easy reps with 315. I get under there and I'm hitting 8, 10, struggling to get 12, right? Yeah. Franco Colombo comes up to me, goes, come here. He goes, don't try to do what he's doing. Do what you can do. He said, look at this. And he went to Ollie and he put his hands and showed me how wide his hips were, right? And then he looked at mine. He goes, see how small you are here. He goes, you can't be it. You're not going to be as strong as he is.
Wow, that's cool.
And I just finally, that dawned on me. That's when I started to realize, oh, okay, well, all right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And you know, I started learning, like I said, I learned a little bit from all these guys.
Right. So you said World's Gym, and you went over to World's Gym also.
I'd go over there, you know, and at one time, remember when it was on, I'm going to say it was on Main Street. It was on the second floor.
Yeah.
Okay, Samir took me up there in 81, and he introduced me to Joe Gold. And Samir said, hey, Joe, I want you to meet Phil Williams. This is going to be a next champion. And Joe looked at me, shook my hand. He said, well, all champions train free. So whenever you want to come on over. And I'm like,
So I
started training there. And I'd go over to Go's gym. I'd go to one in the morning, the other in the afternoon, or the next day, or just whatever I was placing the body parts I was doing.
Right.
And the same thing with Pete Grimkowski. Samir introduced me to Pete, and Pete said, oh, well, your friend of Samir is your friend, man. You can train for nothing. And I trained free.
Man. Wow. Amazing.
Now I'm paying out of the ass to train at Gold's. Just to show you how things work, right?
Right. How things have changed. How was Joe Gold?
Joe was real cool. One of the coolest guys I've ever met. Honestly, one of the coolest people I've ever met. He is kind of like George in a way. These are old guys, old school guys, man. I mean, they could be around today. They couldn't handle it today. I couldn't imagine George being on the planet today, right? With what's going on. he'd kill people or he'd kill himself. But they were the old type, I mean, 50s guys. I mean, 40s, 50s, 60s guys, you know?
Yeah.
And they didn't just hard guys. They were nice guys, but they were blunt. And, you know, they didn't like you. They let you know it right away. That's the type of guys they were.
Right.
And if they did like you, they'd do anything for you.
Yeah. And then Worlds had that outdoor.
I'm sorry?
Worlds had that. World's Gym had that outdoor area,
yes,
too,
did.
Right?
Yes, it did. Yeah. Right. Correct.
That had to be cool to train out there.
Oh, that was. And then later on when Joe moved it to, I want to say Pacific Avenue on the corner where it was. There's a gymnastics center there now.
Yeah, I've seen that.
That was even nicer. I don't know if you know the location I'm speaking of.
Yeah, I do. I passed by it when I was out there about a month ago.
Yeah. And that was a great gym. Mm-hmm. So you could walk from one to the other. Depending on if I'm going to do chest, I might want to do chest at Gold's. I might want to do back the next day at World Gym. Mm-hmm. So I had the freedom to just walk between the two.
Yeah.
It was a good time, man. That was the time of my life.
Did you see Franco training out there? Because in 81, that's when he won the Olympia. And I heard he used to train at Worlds all the time.
At the end, I saw him.
Okay.
And I saw him training a little bit. I saw him actually training Sylvester Stallone there a few times.
Oh, really? No kidding.
World Gym.
That's crazy.
In World Gym.
Yeah.
Now, they're exclusively at World.
Yeah. How did Franco look?
I mean, there's some memories. Yeah, there's some memories there that, man, I sit and start thinking about it. They come up, you know?
Yeah, sure. How did Franco look?
Franco back then was on his, he was not very large. After that, he would say, they come down after a show back then, you know? They used to grow to a show. And after the show, they come back down.
Yeah.
So he was, actually his size wasn't, and he wore baggy clothes, of course, but he wasn't that big and not that impressive at that time.
Did you see him when he was getting ready for the Olympia in 81?
No,
I heard
I
he used to train with his. Okay. Because I heard he used to just train with shorts on and no shirt on and stuff.
Now he may have. Yeah, that was before I got out there.
Oh, okay.
I got out
there
towards the end of 81.
Oh,
it would have been like late November, December, which Olympia would have been over.
Yeah. How did Stallone look?
Not bad. I mean, he looked pretty good. He's muscular.
That was the year he did
one of the Rocky films where he came out shredded.
Yeah.
Kind of looked like Bruce Lee did in 73, sort of. You remember how Bruce Lee entered the dragon? Yeah, he's extremely muscular. Well, he looked as good as that.
Yeah. Did you ever see Arnold train in there?
Condition. I saw Arnold train at World Gym. I used to see him train here and there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'd come in, and if you got in there early enough, you'd see him sometimes. You'd catch him, like, here and there. Just like I see him now. I used to catch him we used to see him in the mornings recently, up until before he had his heart operation. We'd see him at 7:38 in the morning as we'd be leaving. Then we started going earlier and earlier to beat the crowd, so I haven't seen him since.
Yeah, when I was out there, he was training one day at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. By that time, I'm in and out of there.
Yeah.
I try to get in and out as quickly as possible.
Right.
Because by 8 o'clock, of course, you're standing in line to use the equipment.
Yeah, exactly.
And, so, and how was, I try to avoid that altogether.
How was Mike Mentzer? Because his last show was 1980, but he was still pretty thick, right, when you saw him?
He stayed pretty thick up until about 82, and then Mike went through a mental health issue. I don't know if you remember hearing the crazy stories.
Sure, yeah.
But I was around Ray at the time, and Ray never spoke of it much, and I never – Ray was the type of guy, too, that you wouldn't want to make angry. Let's put it that way, right?
Yeah, that's what I heard about him.
I'll tell you a funny story about Ray. Now that I'm thinking about it, we went to Westwood, right? Mm-hmm. My first wife, Ray, myself, I think it was just the three of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into a club, and we all sat there. I think we were drinking wine, and the guy said, it's ready to close, right? Mm-hmm. And so we start getting up, and Ray just sits there. Ray says, well, I'm going to finish this. And the doorman come over to him, and they knew who he was. It was a place that he recommended that we went. Oh, Mr. Mentzer, we have to have you drink up, sir. And Ray just stood there and looked at him and said, I'll take my time. And so we're getting out of there, right? And they're begging Ray to leave, more or less, just, oh, please, Mr. Mentzer, we got to get you out of here. And Ray's in a moody, right? Well, the funny story is he broke up with Rachel McClish soon before this, right? So he's in a real bad mood.
Yeah.
And so we finally get him out of the place, talk him into it. Come on, Ray, let's go, buddy. Let's just get out of here. These guys want to shut down. We get on the street, and we go to cross the street, and he jaywalks, mm-hmm. right? And the police turn on a light. This is in Westwood, of course. The streets are fairly busy. People are leaving the clubs and whatever. Mm-hmm. Turn the lights on him, and he just looks at him and tells them, what the fuck are you looking at? And continues to walk on. No one said it. They didn't say a thing to him. So Ray was, I got to know Ray pretty well. Ray was, boy, he was going through that. He was, not the nicest guy you wanted to be around. He wasn't like he wasn't a bad person. He was just moody.
Yeah.
Extremely moody. And I guess him and Rachel McClish had been together for a while.
Yeah.
And that ended, that didn't go down well with him.
Well, I would have been in a bad mood too if I would have broke up with Rachel McClish. I would have been moody for about a year.
So Ray and I got to know each other until he went to Australia. We hung out together until he moved to Australia. And he moved to Australia in 82 sometime.
Okay. And when did you go to Sweden,
I went to Sweden in 82. I met my first wife working at Chalmers Market. That was the market that Rick Valente got me the job at.
Okay.
I was standing at the end of the parking lot, and she came up to ask me directions. The next thing you know, we got to know each other a little bit. And one of my good friends was dating his girlfriend, and she was here from Sweden on holiday. They were on vacation. They come over to rent an apartment for the summer. Uh-huh. And that's how we met anyway. And then when she went back, she wanted me to come with her. And I talked to Andreas, Samir, and Mike about going over there, what it would be like to go over there. And they thought it'd be a good opportunity. And that's the reason I actually went.
Oh, really?
Andreas Colling, of course, he's from Sweden. So he knew the gym. He knew the city.
Yeah.
And they said, go over there. It'd be a good opportunity for you. And it was. It was a great opportunity.
Why was it so great?
The first time I started doing guest posings, doing seminars and things like that.
Oh, okay.
So everything kind of fell into place.
So bodybuilding was really popular in Sweden at the time.
Oh, man. It more popular over there than it was over here.
Wow.
Bodybuilding was only popular in California, right?
Yeah.
You had two Swedish Grand Prix. You had one in 82. You had one in 83. You had the Swedish Championships. You had the Nordic Championships. You had the European Championships that was there in 83. That's the first time I saw Ben Fato. I'll never forget that. And then you had the world champions there, which I took second in 85. And then you had the Olympia there in 87.
Yeah.
This is a country that's probably smaller than the state of Illinois or just whatever, right?
Wow, really?
That's a lot of bodybuilding activity. There were seminars all the time. There was always something going on. They had their own magazine, of course. So yeah, it was good.
Wow. So in the U.S. at that time, you weren't the Nationals winner yet. So you weren't getting seminars and you weren't getting guest posings and stuff in the U.S.
No, I went to what I did. I decided to compete in the 83 Open European Championships that was held in Halmstad, Sweden.
Okay.
And the guy that eventually won the European Championships, Christer Eriksson, I beat him.
Yep.
He was a heavyweight. I was a light heavyweight. I beat him in the overall. And so from there, that set it off.
Okay.
Yeah, that set it off completely. They thought I was a pro. They said, who's a pro from America? I said, well, no, he's an amateur. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, after that, I did real well.
And how was your training over there?
Basically, I did the same thing over there that I did here. They had a world-class gyms, which Ulf Bengtsson started, I believe. And the equipment was solid, man. It's some of the best gyms in Sweden that I've ever seen. You could go to any town in Sweden and find a great two or three great gyms. Even the small villages had a gym. So, I mean, it was a boom over there. If you went to Denmark, Norway, you went to Germany, some of the best gyms I've ever seen. This is in the early 80s.
Were you able to make your living just through bodybuilding then, being out there?
I was able to for a number of years, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. My wife was a student at the time, and all I did was do seminars or guest posings here and there.
Yeah. Yeah, because personal training really wasn't around yet, right, in the early 80s?
Didn't exist. Did not exist.
It didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yep.
First time I saw, funny, you say that the first person I saw do personal training was Chris Dickerson.
Mm-hmm. What year was that?
That's the first, I'm going to say 80, probably at 80, beginning of 83 maybe.
Okay.
After he'd won the Olympia.
Yeah. How did Chris look in the early 80s, Phil?
Oh, Chris looked good. I mean, he wasn't big, of course.
But right.
Incredible physique. I got to know Chris right quite well, actually. Before the 84 USA, he kind of coached me a little bit, gave me some advice on posing. I stole his song from You Are the One. What was it? Lionel Richie's song I stole.
Lionel Richie, yeah.
I used it at the Nationals, yes. And he talked to me about posing, this, that display, physique display.
Yeah.
We became quite close.
Yeah, great now that you mentioned that, I remember he was the commentator on ESPN when the Universe was on, the 85 Universe.
Yes.
And when he came out, he goes, I worked with Phil on his posing.
Yeah, yeah, Chris was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guy to know. Good guy to, great guy.
And that was an awesome routine you did that year at that 85 Universe and the Nationals.
Right. Yeah, I extended that routine. I knew it was going to be the last time I was going to get to that show, so... That was funny how that worked back then. If you didn't win that, in my mind, you didn't deserve to get a pro card, despite winning the USA and already winning the Nationals, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the fact that I didn't win that show, I said, well, I'm not good enough to be a pro. I'm not going to be one now because you can't go back. And all the guys that tried to go back have failed. So that was a thing you didn't want to do either.
Right.
So that kind of, set me in limbo for a long time, for almost a three-year period.
Yeah, that's amazing now when you think about it. When you think about all the pro cards they give out now, you were the overall winner at the USA, and then you were the overall winner at the Nationals, and you still didn't turn pro.
That's four pro cards, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because the overall winner gets a pro card, and the class winner gets a pro card. So that's four pro cards.
Yeah.
Now I saw a list of shows, and they were pro qualifiers, and I saw this on Instagram, and I couldn't even read. There were so many shows that I couldn't count them.
Yeah.
I mean, worldwide that were pro qualifiers. And the only way in my time you could get to be a pro was to win the world championships. Remember the world championship used to be the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The IFBB world championships was it. If you won, it didn't matter what that was it. That was the way to get a pro card.
Yeah.
So it's changed.
Yeah, that routine you did, that posing routine you did in 85, I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but what was his name? Daryl Stafford, he did that exact same routine you did when he competed in the 86 Junior Nationals in Niagara Falls, because I was in that show. And I remember when he came out, he did your exact same routine. So that's how good your routine was, Phil, that people were actually
I never knew that.
Yeah.
I remember Daryl from years ago. I remember Daryl from the Nationals.
Yeah.
I remember he won the Florida.
He did the same song, and he copied exactly the same poses you did.
Ah, that's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So when you came back to the, when did you come back to the U.S. then after Sweden?
I came back in early 90s, then I went back again. I was going back and forth, kind of undecided about where I wanted to be. My last show was in 96, and of course, they said we were trying to gain size, and of course, to a point where I figured my biggest, I was 216, and that was in 96 Ironman, which I was in fairly good condition. But you figure today, if you look at how much bodybuilding has progressed, 216 is probably one of the smaller guys in the 212 division.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure, yeah.
Well, you have to be 212 and under, right? So I take that back. So you're not big enough. I'd have to stay at in 92, I was 212. So I would be at the top of the 212 class. But I mean,
yeah.
So it was a time when you were trying to figure out, well, get bigger. Well, how much bigger can you get? You know, I remember thinking that and thinking this is not going down well.
Yeah.
And I posted some pictures on Instagram from the last show when I was 216, and then there's some I'm going to post when I was 212. But I mean, it's just that was just a kind of a time for bodybuilding when you had, I remember seeing guys like JP Fuchs and Flex Wheeler, of course, Paul Dillette, and I'm thinking there's nothing you can do with these guys. What are you going to do with standing next to guys like this, right?
That was a whole new world when those guys came on the scene.
That was a whole new world opened up. Yeah. So that was
You're right. I mean, the guys that are weighing like 220, they go down to 212. I mean, those are the biggest guys in the 212. They just diet down, lose that 6-8 pounds, and they just to make that class limit.
Just
you know,
squeeze in. Yeah, squeeze in it.
Yeah. So nowadays, I mean, you got to be 240 and up to have any chance at all. You know.
I would think so. Yeah.
So when you won the USA and the Nationals and stuff in 84 and 85, you were still living in Sweden. You were just coming back for the shows.
I was just coming back for the show. Yeah. Yeah. Huh, the reason it was easy over there is, I mean, it was fairly stress-free life over there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
In Sweden, all I had to do was eat, sleep, and train, and then maybe an exhibition here, an exhibition there. I was under contract with a clothing company for a while. Mm-hmm. I was under contract with an equipment manufacturing company for a while.
Really? Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, that was the best I've ever had.
Yeah. And how's the weather and everything out there?
Well, summers are short.
Okay.
Winters can be extremely long, of course. So you might get snow as early as September, and it might end in May.
Oh, wow. No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. So it depends on how far north. When I was in the southern part of Sweden, I would say you'd had about 8 months of what you could classifies cold weather or even winter.
Yeah. But the people were nice and everything.
Oh, Sweden was great, man. I mean, I mean, if I could do that again, sure.
right. I heard it's changed over there. No, it's not the same, right?
Of
it's not
course.
The same as it used to
be. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a different world. It's like everything else. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not what it used to be. I've heard that from a lot of people over there that I keep in contact with. They said, nah, it's a lot's changed. So,
yeah.
And not for the better, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, Phil, since we're talking about these old stories, let me ask you, like, who was, if you could just think of a couple guys that pop in your head, like someone that was really blew you away, impressive wise, maybe their physique or something they did in the gym, if something just, if you could think of something.
Well, let me think. Physique wise, I remember the first time I saw a picture, I was with a British workout, I had a British workout partner.
Okay.
And this was in 81. We're in California, and he pulls out a British magazine, pulls out of the suitcase, and he shows me a picture of Brian Buchanan at 19.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm thinking, I told him, that's not a real person. He said, no, he's real. I said, no, someone took some scissors and cut his waist out.
Right.
And he goes, no. He goes, no, he was just real. And he showed me, continued to keep showing pictures of him in various magazines that he had. This guy at 19 blew me away. I couldn't even sleep that night. I'd say, oh, how in the hell can anybody look like that at 19?
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, that was crazy. And then I saw Gunnar right before we went to the World Championships.
Okay.
And we were at Ed Connors, in the back of Ed Connors' house, and he took off his shirt and he had on some shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And he started posing. And at that point, he was in great shape. I mean, unbelievable shape. He was very impressive. I saw Samir. I was in Samir's apartment once in the Marina Del Rey. And okay. I had to be before one of the Olympias. And he was just, I mean, his lines, his separation was so deep. You could take a coin and you could roll it in, roll it down the lines that were separation in his thigh.
Yeah.
It was that deep.
Yeah.
I mean, just crazy. Crazy conditioning. His biceps were split so deep you could put your finger between the split.
Wow, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, and intercostal, serratus. I mean, the striations in his chest were just crazy. Yeah.
Was that 82 or 83?
That one comes back to mind. I'm sorry?
When you saw Samir, was that 82 or 83?
It was probably 82 or 3. I was going to say maybe 82 or 3. It had to be, yeah.
Yeah,
and it was crazy. Actually, I'm going to say it was 82 because I was still in California when he came. Yeah. When he won the 83 Olympia, I was living in Sweden, so it was in 82.
Okay, yeah, that was the year he came in a little bit lighter, but he was super shredded.
Super shredded, yeah.
Yeah. What year was that when you saw Gunnar? Was that 81 or 82?
That was in 82. He was going to the World Championships. He took second to Haney that year in Belgium.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking, God, if Haney beat him, he must have really improved.
Yeah, right.
Gunnar was a funny guy. I'll tell you a funny Gunnar Rospo story.
Okay.
We're coming out of a nightclub in Norway. This is a very true story. And it's freezing outside. There's snow everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
People would take the bus there, public transportation, right? There was a group of people waiting for the bus.
Yeah.
Gunnar said, he tapped me on the shoulder. He said, watch this. He had a cigarette in his hand, finished smoking a cigarette. He ran full speed toward the crowd of people and knocked everybody down like bowling pins. And he laughed his ass off after he did. He fell and laughed. I laughed so hard.
That's hilarious.
I kid you not. Yeah.
Oh, my God. How big was he back then? Like 250?
There's stories I think back. I mean, that'll be some that I'll think about after we finish the phone conversation, of course.
Right.
But that was just crazy.
Yeah, that'd be cool going out to
the guys I've ever met.
That'd be cool going out to the clubs and stuff with those guys. You know, I mean, it's one thing working out with them, but then going out to the nightclubs and everything back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you get the crazy looks. I mean, you know, people never seen that before, of course, right?
Right.
Even back then, I mean, they see it more now, of course, but back then, you didn't see people like that.
No.
Whenever you go anywhere, I mean, in a group of guys would go together, they'd be just, people were just, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be in shock.
Yeah, exactly. How about training-wise? I mean, something you saw somebody in the gym do that was, that really stands out that you remember?
Tom Platz would be the one as far as squatting. I mean, squats are the hardest exercise. They take the most endurance. I mean, so it would have to be Tom under the squat rack.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like that before.
I mean, isn't it amazing that was like almost 40 years ago and people still say Tom was still the hardest trainer ever?
A lot of people, yeah. I mean, Lee Priest did a thing on YouTube the other day and he was talking about the hardest trainer and he mentioned Tom Platz.
Yeah.
I mean, me and my wife were watching this the other day, and I said, you should have seen him. That's what I said. I agreed with him right away. I said, I never seen anything like it. Nothing like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you look at Ray Mincer, from what I've seen, guys like Ray, guys like Casey, I saw Alberto Fox train. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I mean, it wasn't picture-perfect form, but I mean, these guys handled weights that I've never seen anything like. Nothing like that since.
Yeah.
Don't have the opportunity to see the newer pros work out. Not really.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've never seen anything like it.
I saw a video of Bertel Fox training, and he trained super heavy, like real heavy weights.
Super heavy. My workout partner, my English workout partner, trained with him a few times. He said, never again. He said, never again. He said, Bertel had two workout partners, right? And basically their job was to hand him his dumbbells.
Right, exactly. I remember that. I saw that in the video.
Yeah, so I mean, he couldn't work out by himself. He couldn't pick the weight. He couldn't pick up. He couldn't do it.
Right.
So
right.
I've never seen anything like that since.
It's interesting when I talked to Dorian Yates. Dorian was, you know, obviously a very hard trainer, and he was one of the hardest trainers I think ever in the history of bodybuilding. But he talked about how over the last 10, even 20 years, you don't hear anymore about this guy training super hard or this guy training. So you don't hear any stories, or you don't hear any like new ways to train or new types of training methodology. You just don't really hear about that anymore from the pros.
No, you don't. But what I see more than anything else is guys straying away from the basic compound exercises. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see more guys relying on machines like hammer strength. Man, imagine doing a chest pad a seated row with a chest pad, mm-hmm. right? You're not right. getting the full extension at all. You're not stretching the muscle.
Right.
It's just a contraction mostly.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these movements, the range is limited. You're limited
yeah.
with range of motion, right?
Yeah.
There's no full extension. There's no maximum contraction. And I see
yeah.
the machines, and they start to rely on machines, I guess. They're easier to use, of course.
Sure, right? Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, and I hate to say this, in our watered-down society that we now live in,
mm-hmm.
that this is what's happened.
Yeah, I know. I was in the gym the other day, and I was doing back, and I strained my back last week. So I was icing it and doing yoga and stuff, and then I went in on Sunday to do back. I was supposed to do it on Friday, and I ended up doing it on Sunday. So I just said, well, you know, I'll see what I can do, you know. So it was feeling okay because I stretched it and everything, and I did some yoga that morning. So I was able to do two-arm dumbbell rows. So I went pretty heavy on those. I'm like, okay. So after that, I was just going to do seated cable rows, where normally I would have did T-bar rows. But I said, well, let me go try T-bar rows. So I went over and I tried T-bar rows, and I ended up going heavier than I did my last workout. And I'm looking around, and of course this was a Sunday, but there was like, I must have saw six people on their cell phones sitting on the machines. Nobody was doing any basic exercises at all. They're all using machines, like you said. And that they're just sitting on the bench. And I'm just like, wow, there's just no intensity at all. And like, you're right. Nobody does the compound movements. Nobody does the basics. They always just choose these machines instead, you know?
And the sad thing is they're starting to slowly take away the equipment. And that's what they did with the T-bar row at Go's Gym.
Yeah.
It was a perfectly good mechanism, and they took it away. I'm still angry about it.
Yeah.
It just vanished.
Yeah. And when you think about it.
Next will be the vertical leg press. I can see the vertical leg press. It's always broke. I don't know.
Yeah.
Butthole doesn't know how to use a machine that runs straight up and down, right?
Right.
But it's broke. It's taped up. It's taped up right now as we speak.
Oh, really?
Again.
Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, what they're going to do, they're going to take it away. I feel it. I feel it coming.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, John. I'm glad. I'm happy. I always tell my wife, I said, you know what? I'm glad my time was in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good time to do it, right?
Right.
A real good time to do it. I wouldn't want to do it now.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, of course, there's more shows than ever. I mean, how many pro shows do they have a year now?
I don't know. I don't even know.
I try to keep up with them, but I would say like 20.
Yeah, I bet you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in different places. You might have one in Kuwait, and you have one at the same time, maybe in, let's say, Chicago on the same night, right?
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of shows.
Last weekend, there was one in Chicago and there was one in Vancouver at the same time. Yeah.
At the same time. See, that's what I'm saying. So,
but
none of these shows are really covered. I mean, I missed the magazine.
No. Yeah, me too. Oh, totally.
God, I missed the magazine dearly.
Yeah. And about that equipment, you know, you think about guys like Joe Gold or George Turner, and they built the equipment or they got the equipment specifically for their members. I remember hearing stories about Joe Gold. Like, he would ask the members, like, how does this feel? How does this seated cable row feel, you know?
Absolutely.
And then he would change it in order to make it a better exercise, you know? Man,
George did that with me. George did that with me when I was there. Oh, yeah. We developed a seated long pulley row. Not just seated row, seated long pulley row, which means that cable was real long. And I mean, it was long. It was like 15 feet long. From the weight stack to the end of the seat would be like almost 15 feet.
Yeah.
And you had different places where you could set your feet for different lengths of the body or different arm lengths, right?
Right.
And that was, it was a great machine. for doing yeah. seated rows. One of the best I've ever used. I haven't used anything like it since. And we're going to the 70s.
Most gyms wouldn't do that today because it would take up too much space, you know?
That's true. You're probably right. You're right about that.
Right.
So you see, when we did seated rows together, what I had to do in order to get a full extension, right?
Yeah.
Was to put the plate, the metal plate in front of the machine.
Right.
Fit perfectly.
Right.
And that's how I, yeah. Other than that, yeah, I get a short range of motion. I touch on the plates tap out before I get a full stretch.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe one day there'll be a need for somebody to come and redesign equipment and who knows? Go back to old school ways.
Yeah.
But right now, most of the machines that you see now, they're smaller and they're more compact.
Yeah.
And that's the space, of course, right?
Right. Exactly. They're just trying to get the most economical way to run the gym, you know, but they're not doing it for the best equipment, you know.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, at least we lived during the during the golden age there, Phil, and we get
it was absolutely golden, man. I tell you, like I said, that going back looking at Venice, man, I remember how crazy it was, and I mean, it was real training, it was real bodybuilders, and that time kind of died. What around 19 after 95, 96, it just sort of went away. So that lasted for about 25 years, maybe, right? 70s, 80s, and
And it's funny too when you were living through it. I'm sure you didn't think that was the golden age. That was just the way things were back then. But you didn't know it was not going to last, you know? Right?
No, I've never thought it would go away.
Right, exactly.
Never thought it would go away. It's amazing.
Yeah, Rick Valente said the same thing. He goes, thank God I was alive during that time, you know. And I told him the same thing. I said, yeah, I hate being older, you know, but I'm glad that at least I got to be around during that time and see those contests and see those bodybuilders and see that type of training and all that stuff, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, man.
All right, Phil. Well, thanks for joining us on the show again, and thanks for all your great stories. You got some great stories from George Turner's place and Gold's Gym and Sweden and all that. So it was great hearing the stories.
Oh, I wish I could remember all of them, John. There's a lot of them I'm forgetting. They'll pop in mind later on, of course.
All right, well,
trying to fall asleep when I can't sleep and I'm having one of those insomnia nights. All these stories really start flying in my head. Then I start laughing at myself and thinking that was crazy. Craziest shit I've ever seen. And there's so many of them, though.
We'll write them down next time. So many. We'll have you on again.
All right, John, sounds good. I appreciate it, buddy.
All right. And when, next time I'm out there, we'll train together again.
Yeah, let's do. Let's plan that.
Okay. All right, Phil. Sounds good, John. Buddy. All right, take care.
Take care, my friend.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. Bye. All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thanks to Phil Williams for joining us this week. And I want to thank our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring the episode this week. Join us next week on the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast when we'll be joined by Craig Munson, another great bodybuilder from the 1980s and 90s. Craig was a monster, a man before his time. And so we're going to have a great interview with Craig Munson about his career in the bodybuilding world. So join us next week. See you guys next week. Have a great week, everybody. See you then. Take care.